Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, February 18, 2016. The United Nations says ethnic violence is to blame for the deadly shooting at a UN camp in Malakal.
Fighting between youth Dinka and youth Shilluk in the protection of civilian side in Malakal, and it's still a very tense and volatile situation. There's been a lot of violence where the youth have been using machetes, small arms and other weapons to fight each other.
And aid agencies say the situation is rapidly deteriorating in Wau due to reported rampage by members of the South Sudan Army.
We are aware that there are people out there who are trapped in the outskirts of Wau. We do not know how their situations are like. We do not know the conditions of the children.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. At least five people were killed and more than 30 others wounded during fighting between youth sheltering in a UN compound in Malakal. The UN mission in South Sudan, UNMISS, says the violence erupted between two different ethnic groups that have taken refuge in the camp for internally displaced persons. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from the capital, Juba.
UNMISS spokesperson Ariane Ganter says the fighting began last night.
There was a fighting between youth Dinka and youth Shilluk in the protection of civilian side in Malakal, and it's still a very tense and volatile situation. There's been a lot of violence where the youth have been using machetes, small arms and other weapons to fight each other.
Ganter says UN military personnel are using tear gas to defuse the situation. She says UN peacekeepers have also intensified patrols inside and around the camp to contain the situation. Jacob Niel, one of the internally displaced persons residing at the Malakal camp, says a total of 20 people, including women and children, were killed in the shooting that began last night. South Sudan in Focus has been unable to independently verify that figure. Niel says the fighters are using machine guns and Kalashnikovs to shoot at unarmed civilians.
They killed all people away, the community leaders to collect the dead body and children who remain in the house.
Niel says SPLA forces are also involved in the shooting. SPLA spokesperson Lieutenant Colonel Marco Mayol declined to elaborate on what is happening in Malakal.
In position now to tell you exactly what is going on. I didn't consult the authorities.
UNMISS says the attackers were targeting people who are under the protection of the United Nations, a clear violation of international law.
Taking UN premises and not respecting the sanctity of UN premises, compounds and people living in these compounds, be it international workers, national workers or civilians we are protecting, constitute a war crime.
South Sudan in Focus contacted Chual Thon, governor of the newly created Eastern Nile State, by phone, but Thon's phone was switched off. The UNMISS camp in Malakal hosts an estimated 50,000 IDPs. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Malakal is not the only place where deadly fighting is causing hardship for civilians. Humanitarian agencies in the newly created Wau state are calling on the state authorities to allow humanitarian agencies to reach people affected by the conflict. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says more than 30,000 people have been displaced by fighting between government forces and armed groups in Wau State. The Office of the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in the state says the situation of the IDPs in Wau is dire. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Wau Town.
Last night, residents say a rogue group of armed South Sudan Army forces attacked civilians at Suk Jo and Lokoloko Market. Residents in the area say sporadic shooting continues this afternoon. A physician at Wau Hospital says 12 patients with bullet wounds were admitted today. Joyce Asha Francis is OCHA's coordinator in Wau. She says state government officials should allow access to humanitarian agencies trying to reach families affected by fighting in several parts of Wau State.
We are aware that there are people out there who are trapped in the outskirts of Wau. We do not know how their situations are like. We do not know what the pregnant mothers are doing to themselves because they are not able to access antenatal clinics. We do not know the conditions of the children. And with all the lootings, the burning of the houses, the raping, we don't know what is going on. It is our appeal that, as the deputy governor, you will be able to do something to bring the security into control, to allow the humanitarian actors to go out there and see what is going on, and also that they are able to deliver services.
One resident who fled from Busere spoke to South Sudan in Focus on condition of anonymity for fear of government reprisal. He says South Sudan government troops are raping, looting, and burning civilians' houses.
Our situation here in Wau is bad. As we left all that we have in Busere, where to sleep, what to eat, and drink is a problem. So I appeal to the government to take away this army from the area and bring us the police.
Fons Filberto, South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, or SSRRC, director in Wau, says many IDPs are fleeing from Busere to Wau town. He says women, elderly people and children need urgent humanitarian assistance.
We have called on all the humanitarian organizations in the state to assess the IDPs to provide us with humanitarian assistance. As we see, the number is big and many are still coming.
Wau State Acting Governor Andrea Dominic admitted that South Sudanese authorities have blocked humanitarian agencies from reaching people affected by fighting in Wau State.
Whatever atrocities that used to happen on the road, as been mentioned by the sister that there is, sometime enemies who have been sick on the road, to stop them, preventing them not to go outside. I have to apologize on that, what was happening. And then I will talk to the military command here and such thing to be stopped. They need to let people to the conflict in the state. And they have a right to access to anywhere.
The former commissioner of Wau, Anthony Charles Mberende, says the soldiers attacked him at a checkpoint and took all his personal belongings and a large sum of money.
They ordered me to come out of the car. And as I got out, they hit my neck and I fell down. They took from me three telephones, the Galaxy brand, my eyeglasses and reading glasses, and an amount of 75,000 South Sudanese pounds during that incident.
Andrea Dominic, the deputy governor of Wau State, issued a statement this afternoon calling on the army to respect civilians' lives and their property. He also called on all military leaders in the area to punish errant members of the South Sudan Army who went on a rampage in Wau town last night. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting from Wau.
From Wau, we move back to Juba, where the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission says it will take at least 4 weeks to complete security arrangements for Juba and other towns. A joint group of military and police units drawn from both government and SPLM in opposition forces were supposed to monitor Juba, Bor, Malakal and Bentiu by now. JMAC and its partners met in Nairobi and released a statement today saying it welcomes the government's appointment of Riek Machar as first vice president, but remains concerned about delays in forming a transitional government of national unity. As Philip Thornaleu reports for VOA from Juba, civil society groups are calling for the demilitarization process to begin quickly because they say South Sudanese citizens continue to suffer.
Bill Hammond is the military and security advisor to JMEC. He says plan for transporting SPLM-IO forces to Juba could be completed by this weekend. However, Hammond warns that the process of demilitarizing Juba may take longer than expected.
But the actual movement of forces will take longer. Both the number of forces leaving Juba and then the number that has to be brought back in. It will take several weeks for us both to provide the resources for the movement, mostly of the opposition forces back into Juba, and then to actually conduct that. So I think the timeline that we're on right now, if we don't have any more setbacks, that we could see the movement of those forces complete within 4 to 6 weeks.
Speaking to reporters after attending a meeting with members of the civic society groups, Hammond says JEMEC is engaging both the government and the SPLM-IO leaders to speed up the demilitarization of Juba Town.
Both sides have come to an agreed plan for both the movement of forces out of Juba as well as the reintroduction of opposition forces back into Juba. And so we're moving forward on those. We will have an international coordination meeting within the next day or two that will try to link support with the movement requirements of those forces.
Hammond declined to provide details on the demilitarization plans for Juba. Rajab Mohandis is executive director of the non-profit South Sudanese Network for Democracy and Elections. He says his group will continue to pressure the warring parties to quickly form the transitional government of national unity. Mohandis says JEMEC should hold the parties accountable for not respecting the terms of the agreement they signed in August last year.
Reinforce adherence to the terms of the agreement to ensure immediate and complete cessation of hostilities nationwide. Guide the parties to the agreement to expedite the implementation of the transitional security arrangements and specifically the demilitarization process of Juba and other major towns as mentioned in the peace agreement.
Mohandis says JEMEC should seek the opinion of South Sudanese about progress on implementing the peace agreement. Civic society activist Mdekaje Lona says leaders of the warring parties are asleep at the wheel.
I feel that the process is taking too long, not just long. And what we are calling upon as civil society is we are advising the parties that the demilitarization process should start. It shouldn't take very long because, one, we're not expecting so much in order for the army to move out of town. What we know as citizens is that the army just need water, they need tents, and they need basic logistics so that they move out.
Lona says the government and the SPLM-IO should put the interests of South Sudanese above everything. SPLM-IO leaders say First Vice President Machar will only come to Juba once the security arrangements are completed. For VOA News, I am Philip Tonaleu in Juba.
Still in Juba, the SPLM in opposition is accusing government forces of violating the permanent ceasefire signed in August by the leaders of both warring parties. Members of the SPLM-IO advance team in Juba say government forces are attacking villages and preventing civilians from accessing humanitarian aid. As Mungume Devs Rakarinj reports from Juba, the government has denied the allegations, saying South Sudan Army is fighting criminals in the newly created Budue, Amadi and Wau states.
The chairperson of the SPLM-IO Committee on Energy, Henry Odwar, told reporters at a news conference in Juba today that the South Sudan Army is committing gross violations of human rights and crimes against humanity. As a result, Odwar says, civilians in Amadi and Wau states are hiding in the bush.
We are extremely horrified by the indiscriminate attacks and burning of villages carried out by government forces. The heinous acts are accentuated by massive displacements, many killings of civilians, raping of women, looting of property, including food items.
Odwar says earlier this month, government forces and allied militia attacked villages of Ngomba, Ngabu, Bagari, Faraja, Ngisa, Tadu and Natabu in Wau County of the Greater Bahar al-Ghazal region. He accused government forces of killing a woman in Meke village of Maridi State earlier this month. Odwar says the insecurity caused by South Sudan's army is blocking humanitarian agencies from reaching families who are at the brink of starvation in areas affected by the violence.
On the 12th of this month, in Izo County, government forces attacked our base in Izo County, resulting into massive displacement of people in the surrounding villages. A known number of civilians were wounded during this aggression and foodstuff looted. In Yambio County, on the 12th of this month, the government forces attacked Rirangu Payam and burnt many houses and looted the foodstuff of the civilian population.
South Sudan's information minister and government spokesman, Michael Makwey, insists the South Sudan Army is the disciplined force. Makwey says government forces are battling criminals in Equatoria and Bahar al-Ghazal areas.
Of course, you know that their chairman has been appointed as the first vice president and he has declined, he has reneged to come. So they are trying, creating all this dust in order to cover up their mistake, in order to cover up so that they are not blamed. They are doing all this to divert the attention from all these violations, series of violations which they are doing, so that people say, it is the government which is in violation.
Makwei says the government is ready to talk about any allegations of violations of permanent ceasefire with the SPLM-IO advance team in Juba. The UN says the ongoing conflict has devastated the lives of 1.8 million South Sudanese and displaced more than 2.8 million people. At least 65,000 South Sudanese have fled to neighboring countries of Uganda, Kenya, Sudan, and Ethiopia, seeking refuge from the deadly fighting. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
Philip Thorne-Aleu contributed to this report in Juba. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we bring the latest information on the Ugandan elections. Don't go away.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would you describe your perfect day?
My perfect day is when maybe I'm so stressed up and tired, and maybe I just got home and my mom has cooked some delicious food for me and said, hey, David, the food is ready, come and eat.
My perfect day will be one day spent with all the people I love, yes.
My perfect day will start when the first person I got is my friend. And we will start discussing about some issues. And after that, we will have some breakfast or lunch. Then that will be my perfect day.
A perfect day will be a day where I have a time to myself. Probably I have free, unlimited browsing. I have food too.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Seven farmers' association in Jonglei State want the state government to provide them with a proof of purchase of much-talked-about tractors the state sold to farmers 2 years ago. Jacob Achek reports for VOA from Bor.
In 2014, Jonglei State Agriculture Ministry sold 8 tractors on loan to Farmers Association in Bor County. The 8 tractors were handed over to a group of 7 farmers in Bor earlier this year. Mabiuri John, the director of local advocacy group known as Youth Mama Group, says his organization has no proper providing ownership of the tractors. And without those legal documents, the farmers cannot prove they own the tractors.
In 2017, because we are going just to pay something. We are not just yet have the whole amount, the Ministry of Agriculture. We are still not signed the document.
The Director General in the Ministry of Agriculture and Forestry, Atim Degak, says legal document will be given to farmers very soon. He said the Ministry of Agriculture will only work with group of active farmers.
This category were an initiative from the Agricultural Bank of South Sudan that Jonglei State was given 8 tractors to be loaned or to be taken or to be given to farmer groups on loan. So it happened that 7 farmer groups.
David Nyengood is an inspector in the State Ministry of Cooperative and Rural Development. He says the government need to bring more tractors to the region.
One group which is remaining is just called self-help group. That is for disabled people. And we wait them now. If they will come, they will take their tractors. But I don't know, by the way, because the time that is they are receiving their tractors, I was in Juba. So whether they are not receiving document or yet. But I think the document should be preparing. The ministry is not a big deal.
Atim Degak says they have until 2021 to make payment on those tractors. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek from Bor.
The U.S. State Department, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security has announced a temporary stay extension for Sudanese and South Sudanese nationals who are afraid to go home. Temporary protected status could give those nationals an additional 18 months in U.S. Ian Bior has more from Washington.
Temporary Protected Status, or TPS, is a provisional U.S. immigration status given to certain nationals of designated countries such as Sudan and South Sudan, where conditions back home are considered too dangerous for citizens to return. The Department of Homeland Security has recently extended the TPS for Sudanese and South Sudanese nationals for another year and a half, effective May 3rd. Homeland Security Public Affairs Officer Daniel Cosgrove says there are several situations under which visitors would qualify for TPS.
A country can be designated for temporary protected status because a certain situation like an ongoing armed conflict or a natural disaster or an epidemic prevents nationals from that country from returning safely, or the country can't handle their return.
Cosgrove says the ongoing conflict in South Sudan makes it difficult for some nationals to return safely to their homes. Recent fighting in Darfur could also impede the safety of Sudanese in the U.S. thinking about returning home. Along with the extension, eligible applicants can also apply for a new employment authorization document during their stay. To be eligible, a Sudanese or South Sudanese national must already have a temporary protection status or have been residing in the U.S. since January 25, 2016. Applicants who have an existing TPS application with the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service need not to submit a new form. Those with a TPS order who wish to take advantage of the extension must re-register before March 25th. Those who don't must file for an application no later than July 25th of this year. Cosgrove says the redesignation is important because it
allows eligible South Sudanese nationals to apply for and receive TPS for the first time. If you're a South Sudanese national and you've continually resided in the U.S. since January 25, 2016, and you meet all other TPS eligibility requirements, you may apply for TPS.
The TPS order for South Sudan was implemented in November 2011, shortly after it became a country, and was not prepared to receive nationals returning to the country. Cosgrove says since that time, it has been extended and redesignated a few times.
And this latest extension allows eligible South Sudanese nationals who already have TPS to re-register and extend their TPS for an additional 18 months.
Sudanese and South Sudanese nationals with TPS applications already pending with U.S. Immigration Service do not need to resubmit a new form. They'll automatically be considered for the 18-month extension. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
We now take you to Uganda, where voters were flocking to polling stations all day to cast their ballots in presidential and legislative elections, which ran into delays in a number of areas. Polls closed about an hour ago. Elizabeth Pollard has the latest from Kampala.
Voters began moving around the country's capital, Kampala, before dawn, making their way to their local polling station. In some areas, like the suburb of Mbuya, voting materials came on time, and voters stood by to inspect the contents of the polling materials.
You do like this. Are they sealed? Want
they
to see?
Sealed.
All right.
Yeah.
At the National Theater, where European Union observers paid a visit, voting also ran smoothly, and many expressed happiness at the process. However, in many areas, biometric machines did not work, causing delays and upsetting the voters. In other areas, there was an incomplete delivery of voting material. In the Kampala suburb of Chiabando Arisa, by 11 a.m., ballot papers still had not arrived. This caused a confrontation with residents and military police, who were dressed heavily in body armor. One man named Kagozi, involved in the standoff, explained the situation.
We are having ballot boxes present on the station, but no ballot papers. It's making the boys and the young generation here to react, and they are all now reacting and telling the Electoral Commission, why is it doing this? Is it supporting someone, or is it trying to hide something? That's where the problem is coming from.
At a polling station near the Electoral Commission, around 200 voters were left off the official register. This was confirmed by polling observer Simon Katum.
The total number that was estimated for the voters, it was from A to M, it's supposed to be 981. But the number of ballot papers, there are 784, of which they are not tallying.
So there's almost 200 missing.
Yes, so that's why people are complaining about that.
Many voters cried foul, saying this is how elections are rigged.
It is not that smooth, because one, we're supposed to begin voting at 7. It's already coming to 9 o'clock, and yet they will not extend even a single minute towards 4 o'clock two, the numbers of voters that are supposed to be here and the papers that they have bought so far is less almost by 200-something. So where are the other 200-something papers? So some people are not going to vote, and yet our time has been wasted so far. So really, that's total rigging of the IS order so far. I can declare that.
Others were angry by what seems to be a block on social media. Residents from around the city have reported that without VPN bypass, they could not get on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. The Uganda Communications Commission confirmed it blocked social media, including Twitter, Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, and mobile money, for what it called security reasons. The Electoral Commission has apologized for the delays and urged voters to be calm and patient. Election officials assured voters that as long as they are in line before 4 p.m., their votes will be counted. President Yoweri Museveni, in power for the last 30 years, faces a challenge from seven opponents, most prominently opposition leader Kizza Besigye, who has lost to him three times in the past. The opposition says the past elections were marred by vote rigging and voter intimidation. Museveni maintains that he needs more time to implement his development programs. Some voters say their priority is peace and stability in Uganda, while others hope for change and a new regime. Voters also say they are concerned about employment opportunities, especially for young people, and healthcare and education. More than 15 million people are registered to vote in Uganda. Security forces are enforcing tight security as voters face some long wait times to cast their votes. Museveni has been in power since 1986, the end of Uganda's five-year civil war. Elizabeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Five people were killed and more than 30 others wounded during fighting between youths sheltering in a UN compound in Malakal. The UN mission in South Sudan says the violence erupted between two different ethnic groups that have been taking refuge in the camp for internally displaced persons. Humanitarian agencies in the newly created Wau state are calling on the state government to allow humanitarian access to areas affected by conflict. The Inocha says more than 30,000 people, or UNOCHA, have been displaced by fighting between government forces and armed groups in Wau state. And finally, the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission says it would take 4 to 6 weeks to complete security arrangements for Juba and other towns. A joint group of military and police units drawn from both government and SPLM-IO forces were supposed to be monitoring Juba, Bor, Malakal, and Bentiu by now. JMEC and his partners met in Nairobi and released a statement saying it welcomes the government's appointment of Riek Machar, but remains concerned about delays in forming a transitional government. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Carol. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Thursday. We now go to President Kiir's newly created Maridi State to listen to a Baka traditional song. We have been listening to a traditional song from my village in Maridi State. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.